Hello, friends. Welcome to Silo Busting. I'm your host, Allison Coton, an innovation consultant at EPAM Continuum. Let's take a breather. How are you feeling? Forget about your polished, put-together work persona for a minute. Close your eyes and channel your inner self. The person with a family, maybe a garden, good friends, some anxieties and favorite things. We all know how hard it can be to show up as our best selves when the inner self is distressed or in danger. And across the international macrocosm of EPAM, many of us are balancing that focused, professional working self with a human reality that's profoundly disrupted by conflict and an ongoing upheaval of daily life. In today's episode, Stepan Mitish, VP and Country Head for Ukraine, brings Elena Schechter, Chief Marketing and Strategy Officer and SVP, inside the reality on the ground for our colleagues living through the ongoing war in Ukraine. Our people are survivors, he says, but not just that. We show up under unthinkable pressure in ways that continue to inspire both our internal community and our broader neighborhood of clients. This productive work in the midst of a war zone is impressive for the business, but also as a reflection of our people's deeper selves, tremendously ingenious, deeply supportive of one another, and remarkably resilient in the face of an unfolding tragedy. What does it mean to lead people through this kind of challenge? And as the months pass, how can we establish some kind of stability amid this ongoing chaos? To our Ukrainian colleagues, we see you. We so appreciate your stories and your shared experience, and we long for you to feel safe again, as well as fulfilled by the work you're doing. Take care of your inner selves and be safe as you continue to deliver work that dazzles both us, your coworkers, and our business partners.
Hey, Stepan. Thanks for agreeing to do this. And I think before we get into the number of topics that I was hoping we run through, I was wondering if you could give me and our listeners a short overview of your own journey at EPAM and how you became really our leader in Ukraine through the crisis and what you were up to before and really your journey, how you got here.
Hey, Lina, thanks for having me. Sure. Well, if you look into the past, I joined EPAM in 2006. That was mostly like 16 years and a half, right? I joined yet at that time I was quite, I would say, young delivery manager, team lead. Prior to EPAM, I already got experience leading teams and actually started working at my second course of the university. So by my 25, I've got already probably more than 5 years of experience. So one of my first projects was in financial services. At that time, that was quite a small tech firm based in New York that used Microsoft technologies to basically power and empower fintechs in Wall Street. At that time, it was called Ideal. And that was quite an interesting journey because basically we got into this deal quite spontaneously, right? So first, they signed a deal with another vendor, which miserably failed, and EPAM was asked to help in a very short time frame to basically launch this in production. And I was one of those delivery managers who supposed to make the magic. And luckily, and thanks to the great team we got, so we made that production release like in half a year, and then like started to basically continue developing this project. And with this success, our, let's say, relationship with this client started to significantly grow, and also my role started to grow together with it. And probably in 2-3 years, I already become, let's call, principal delivery manager for this account. It was around 300 people. Spread internationally. We got teams in Ukraine, we got teams in Poland, we got teams in India, a few other countries. And so that was very, let's say, fruitful and interesting experience for myself. After that, like in parallel to that, right, as we work in a company where we typically wear several hats, I also was running our Microsoft direction as a resource manager, which also helped me a lot. And by the way, that account that I was managing also was very heavily .NET driven. After probably 5-6 years, I was asked to become a let's call it, delivery partner for the whole financial services portfolio in Ukraine, right? And I was partnering with a person like from InMarket. He is no longer with EPAM, but still he was a great supporter and did a lot for my career. And that was also quite an, like, I would say, helpful experience, both for myself and I believe for the Institute of Delivery Partners per se. Around 5 years ago, I was asked by Yuri and Victor whether, like, I would like to become a lead in slightly different area and basically lead our Kyiv and Vinnytsia offices, because Ukraine was growing a lot. So we've been showing 30% year over year headcount growth. So I took the challenge. In parallel, I was continuing doing what I was doing in terms of portfolio and delivery management. And around 2 years ago, when Yuri decided to finally move to Switzerland, like, again, there was a talk with Yuri and Victor that, okay, are you ready for the next challenge? I told, okay, give me one day to think. And next morning I told that, yes, I'm ready. And that was also quite interesting experience, because that year, basically, COVID came, right? And when I just recall in that time, at that time it was something like catastrophical, right? But now you recall it with a smile on your face, and that kind of catastrophical event, in fact, brought EPAM to the even higher growth rate. And like in 2021, we grew like globally and in EPAM, like, I don't know, in EPAM Ukraine, more than 45%, which was absolutely unthinkable before, right? So, and next year also, like, not next year, but yeah, last year, when there was only like second year of my career in the role of Ukraine head, so this like barbaric war of Russia in Ukraine came. And again, like, I'm joking to myself and to my colleagues that everybody in Ukraine got 2022, like, 1 year you can, you know, count as a 3 or 5 years of experience. So we all become more mature. Like, we understood that what really, like, a great team means, not just in theory, like, etc. So that was my career. Like, again, I was very happy witnessing how EPAM was, you know, changing over all these years. And I also was, like, have been, and right now also happy to, you know, witness it and try to contribute to the, like, successful future of EPAM.
I remember the conversations we had across the board. Obviously, you know, I have my own experience of living through COVID and through the various crises that EPAM had undertaken. And, you know, for me, it's felt like one thing after another with COVID, with Belarus. Obviously, none of that sort of even approaches the absolute tragedy and the impact of the war. But I do think that it's interesting to hear people's journeys, because, you know, we think we were better prepared because we had to address all these different challenges even before the war started. But Stepan, I can't help but remember the conversations we had getting kind of a view of reality from the United States, which is where I am, as you know. Right. And having discussions with you guys where, you know, we got a different view, as you know. Do you recall sort of the feeling on the ground from our leadership team, specifically in Ukraine, when the war started, and sort of what was the first thing you started thinking about, and then what was the first thing you started doing when it became clear that Russia was actually invading the country of Ukraine?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely the view, like, from the ground in Ukraine and the view probably like from US was slightly different, right? Because the rhetorics of our local government was kind of still there is a room for diplomacy. Like, we don't believe into this as something possible. And of course, like, it was mentioning that we started preparation for potential war quite before it actually happened. So we got very solid BCP plan, like, et cetera, et cetera. But if you ask myself whether I was personally believing in it, no, I didn't. So I didn't. And even now, I, like, for me, it's hard to accept how could anybody in 21st century to do what actually was done. So I cannot, like, even I'm already adult, right? I'm not a naive, like, young guy, but still it's hard to accept. Well, again, if you expect to hear from me, like, some, I don't know, loud decisions the very first hours or days, well, I got great team. We've been preparing for like the worst quite a long time, and every like senior leader was actually aware of what to do. And our first actions were all about the safety of our people and their families. So when actually everything began, it began very, very early morning, or you can say even at night. I started to get like a huge amount of messages from my team from Kharkiv, where like the first actions began, from other cities. Like, everybody like woke up because there was a lot of like very loud, it was a very loud night and morning, a lot of explosions. And of course, like, it was everything about the evacuation of our people, their safety. On the very first day, we got very kind of strict and a clear plan of who to move and where to move. So we've opened in the western part of Ukraine so-called shelters, right? That was Vinnytsia, that was Lviv, that was Ivano-Frankivsk, also Uzhgorod. So in the vast majority of our people in the impacted areas, first day or days were actually moving with their families away from the war actions. And probably a couple of first weeks, you know, every morning I was waking up and I was like, for a few seconds, asking myself a question, is it a dream or not? And like after a couple of seconds, I was realizing it's not. And to be brutally honest, right? So there was so high level of uncertainty. What's going to be with Ukraine? What's going to be with EPAM in Ukraine? What's going to be with EPAM globally? How much it's going to impact us, right? So, and nobody could actually answer this question. But what is really important is that once I started to realize and experience and witnessing what I was experiencing around, what I was shocked by how much people were united to help each other. So basically, we've been working like, it's a huge, like at that time it was like 14,000 employees, but we were working like a one whole. Everybody was helping everybody. And after a week of the beginning of the war, I was afraid a lot to start hearing a lot of complaints from our clients about failed delivery, non-delivering services. But instead, I was vice versa seeing emails from clients who was praising our teams for working days and nights and even delivering planned releases. And probably on the second or third week of the war, when like it was already understood that Russia is not able to do a so-called blitzkrieg in 3 days, right? I understood that no, it's not that easy, or it's not possible to break Ukrainians and to break EPAM in Ukraine. And exactly the mails from clients that despite all the challenges, all the, like, I don't know, craziness that was going on, still we were delivering relentlessly. And at that time, I understood how great our team in Ukraine is. And I'm still very much proud of it, very much. So I'm happy to have such a team, and I'm proud to be part of it.
That's great. I mean, again, you know, my perspective was from the corporate war room. As you know, we all met in Newtown. So similar sort of shock and absolute sort of concern, worry. I don't even know what the right word would be. And we were absolutely, on the one hand, devastated with the destruction of lives and property and dreams for people and hopes. On the other hand, we could see you guys pulling together as a single, really a single entity. And it was incredible. And you remember all of the various sort of feedback we got from clients. I want to pivot there for a minute, because from my point of view, what was able to be done in a very quick step-wise approach was nothing short of a miracle. You know, people from dangerous locations, from red locations to less, you know, less dangerous locations. We had all these platforms turned on in a matter of days. We had people reporting their whereabouts, asking for help, delivering supplies, and all of that was done in really a matter of days. But the thing that I thought was the most incredible was really with all of this going on, with people fearing for their lives and the lives of their families, we were still writing code, doing deployments. People were doing, you know, incredible heroic things on the ground, but also doing delivery from things like bomb shelters and various kind of faraway locations where people ended up moving to in order to avoid actually being in the midst of ongoing attacks. And so from your point of view, you know, why do you think they did it? I mean, why do you think that in such an incredible time of stress, our teams were so focused on continuing the delivery motion for customers?
Yeah, absolutely, Lina. That's what still impresses me. I believe it's a set of a combination of factors, right? First, probably it's part of Ukrainian values or DNA to be very much focused on results, first of all, right? And then we commit for something, we, you know, try to do everything, do our best to basically deliver upon our commitments, right? But probably the second factor, and it's also very important, is because basically Ukrainian at that time, and even now, right? So we don't have any other home. And we understand that we fight for our lives, for our, like, workplaces, for our families, and like, if not me, then who's gonna do that, right? And I guess those two factors, like, you know, working ethics plus the understanding that, like, when you work, when you support your country on the economical front, it's also absolutely important to pay taxes, to preserve working places, etc., etc. So, yeah, I guess these are the main factors. And so, you know, at that time, nobody would actually distinguish basically, you know, serving in the army or serving on the economical front or doing some volunteering stuff. Everybody were united across, you know, one goal to basically survive and to finally win this war. Just wanted also to add that, yes, absolutely, everything that you listed, like all the internal systems to monitor the safety of our people, like all the programs that we run, like, for example, IPAM Family Resettlement Program to help our IPAMers, their families and kids to evacuate, like those who can legally do that. Like, we've done a huge amount of work. And again, we've done that in a very short time frame under, like, huge pressure, working, like, days and nights, working in the bomb shelters. That was probably unimaginable amount of stress. But as I said, like, before, we got much more resilient. And, you know, there is a expression, anything that does not kill you makes you stronger. And that's exactly about IPAM Ukraine, Ukrainian nation, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, for sure.
And last, probably, but not least, Lina, worth to mention that it's not only about Ukrainian team, right? So we also witnessed and experienced a huge help from global IPAM, right? from a variety of teams, countries, people, our clients, customers, and we also felt that support. And of course, when, you know, the whole civilized world is united across helping you, that also motivates a lot. So we were not alone.
I'm so happy to hear that. You have no idea, because we were trying very hard to support you guys, but we're still across an ocean. I want to pivot because we're 15 months out from the start of the war. And, you know, I don't know that you and I can sit there and talk about what we think is going to happen or how long it's going to take for the war to end. But I do know that it will end. And I want to ask you, you know, given our focus on trying to continue and build up the services industry, the IT industry, the specialization that really Ukraine is famous for, and also the real pressure from some of our customers who are saying, you know, that they support Ukraine and maybe doing so in some moderate ways, but are still choosing to not necessarily continue the work or expand their work in Ukraine. If you could, what would you say to customers who are deciding that they're not going to be in Ukraine for the long term right now? I mean, we've seen some people leave. What would your message be to those people that are really our customers?
Well, on the other hand, on the one hand, I understand their decisions, right? Being in their shoes, probably I would also think about the risking. But on the other hand, look at the situation. So we've gone through like full-scale invasion the first days of this war, and we survived. We even delivered, right? Then in the fall, we've went through this like missiles attacks on our critical infrastructure. And still, we survived. We delivered relentlessly. Like, who knows what we're gonna go through in the future, but I believe that the worst days are already behind us. So just believe in Ukraine. Just like ask your question. So whether your team or whether your project in Ukraine, whether they deliver. And if the question is yes, and I believe in the vast majority of such questions, the answer gonna be yes. So just support Ukraine. Bring more business to Ukraine. Create new working places in Ukraine, because I strongly believe that once this war is over and Ukraine wins, there will be huge queue of those companies, investors, etc., you name it, who will want to help Ukraine to rebuild it, to invest into Ukraine, to invest in particular in Ukrainian IT. And if you're going to be in the end of the queue, probably it will be much harder to find the best talents exactly for you and your business. So just believe in Ukraine. We never, when it comes again to the professional services and delivery, so despite all that we've experienced it last in this year, so I hope that we did our best and we will continue doing this and try to continue being the trusted and reliable partner for our lovely clients.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what, you know, I'm hoping to convey as well. One is sort of the resiliency. Two is the there isn't an equivalent country with the level of specialization in advanced technology, particularly in the space that we play in with digital engineering. Mm-hmm. Even more so. And with EPAM, I think we're not only trying to rebuild Ukraine and continue its evolution into a digital country, but the work of services is really backed by the full faith and credit of the global EPAM. So I think if we could convey that message together, I think that would be my dream. But it's difficult. And I think you'll agree as well that it's difficult to convince people to build, you know, and invest, particularly in mission-critical technologies, whilst the war is still going on. And yes, I think that it'll be ending soon, but no one really knows when or how.
Yeah, I agree. And to add to the resiliency, right, statement, right, Of course, I'm biased, right? I'm ahead of Ukraine. I'm living in Ukraine, and I'm biased to a certain extent. But ask yourself like a question: how many like is there any more resilient nation on the planet Earth right now? Probably not that many, right? Because again, like, so we've done this evacuation. Okay, that's huge experience. Like bombing critical infrastructure. Okay, now every guy or girl like who does IT, so he got those batteries or like solar panels or I don't know some hybrid inverter. So again, like it's like in the book of Nassim Taleb, like anti-fragility, right?
That's right.
Ukrainians are really anti-fragile nation, and again, I'm proud of it, and I hope those clients who've been working with us, they witnessed it. It's not just the words. But I'm biased, but again, that's part of my job.
Well, you know I am as well. So, I mean, I think there's one thing to think you're in the trenches. It's another thing to be in the trenches and have to hook up solar batteries and Starlinks and all of that and make that work in dev test sec ops. I want to ask one last question before I think we both have to go. So, you know, so we've navigated sort of collectively all these different crises, and you guys have done an incredible job, you and your team and every single person in Ukraine who's supporting our customers, who works for EPAM and who's working to help us. And now I think collectively the world has gone absolutely bananas over all this AI noise. So generative AI, regular other AIs, you know, the rise of LLMs, all this stuff. And I think we're getting a lot of questions on sort of what is the impact we think we're going to be seeing as a result of really the rise of these generative AI tools and models. Do you have a view? I mean, and is it contextualized for Ukraine? I mean, are you guys, what's your thought on sort of the impact short term and longer term on our work and how we work?
Yeah, absolutely. So historically, Ukrainians, when it comes to IT, they were very curious, right? So from the late 90s, right, we've been as a IT community, been reading a lot of books, we're using a lot of different tools, etc., etc. And this is legacy, like why it's like that, but it's the fact. And when it comes to artificial intelligence, generative AI, ChatGPT, and many, many other tools, of course, Ukrainian keep being very curious about it. So I'm a huge believer in the future of IT, right? And I believe that just like even talking not only about Ukraine, but I cannot imagine the planet Earth without exponentially increasing impact of information technology on our lives. Look at us, right? We already like an Android, so we cannot live without our mobile phones, all the bank accounts, all the stuff is linked to it. So I do believe in the future of IT. I also do believe in the future of successful Ukraine that is IT driven. And you know that we got a lot of products that basically confirmed that, like, for example, DIA application. And when it comes to artificial intelligence, of course, I'm very much into it. I'm using it on my daily basis. Fortunately or unfortunately, ChatGPT is already writing emails better than I do, while I'm not the worst at writing emails, and also it's writing code also quite not bad, and the developers can use those code snippets. So what I want to say, and this is my belief, I don't think that AI gonna replace humans tomorrow, but I do believe that those humans who are going to use AI will replace those who will not. So that's my take.
I agree with you. I think your digital minister had said something similar at one of the events that I was at this past year around becoming an AI country and really the war being an AI war. I think it's going to be a really interesting time to live in for both of us. I think we're done with our time here. I want to thank you. I think this has been fun. Well, as much as it can be a conversation this heavy, but it's good to get to know more about you. And I think we want to share more about the profiles of the people that are leading this transformation for EGAM in Ukraine in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for your time. It was also a pleasure talking to you.
This has been Silo Busting, a podcast from EPAM Continuum. EPAM Continuum integrates business, experience, and technology consulting focused on accelerating breakthrough ideas into meaningful impact. Why do we do this? Because real opportunities aren't siloed. Stepan Mitish, thank you so much for joining us. Elena Schechter was our interviewer. Cheers to Kip Palalas, our sound engineer extraordinaire, for getting this podcast recorded. Applause to Ken Gordon, our producer, for all his masterminding behind the scenes. I'm your host, Allison Coden. Until the next one, thank you.